This is Heather Johnson, and you're listening to the Ayurveda Life School Podcast, episode number 157, Decluttering Thoughts and the Art of Peaceful Living with Roberta Hughes. This podcast is for people who want to take their health physically, emotionally, and spiritually to a whole new level using Ayurvedic medicine, the ancient healing tradition from India. This is the Ayurveda Life School Podcast, and I'm your host, Heather Johnson. Hello, my friends. Welcome to the podcast today. We are in for a special treat, and I know that we are just joyously blessed when we get to have visitors with us on the podcast today, and I think we're going to just enjoy today who we've got with us. We are inviting Roberta Hughes to us, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about Roberta, and then we're just going to dive in because we've got a lot to talk about today. So Roberta is the founder and lead instructor at Peaceful Living, and she's going to go into a little more about what Peaceful Living actually is. It's not necessarily what you think it is, and I think it's going to be beautiful for us. But Peaceful Living is a boutique hybrid studio, and it shares a delicate and personalized peaceful living instruction. And the three pillars that she focuses on are Pilates, meditation, and yoga. So we'll get into that a little bit more because I think that's going to really bless us. We haven't talked a lot about Pilates in the past. So I think that would be great to pull that in here today for sure. And she really focuses on nurturing her clients, a customized approach, and helping them to change their relationship with stress. And I don't know anybody who doesn't need that. I think it's such a gift that you're bringing to the world. So thank you so much, Roberta. I would love to know more about you. And I'm super excited that we all get to know you better today. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me on the show. I have been listening and absorbing all of your information. And I feel like it really is a life class. I want to take notes and I want to learn more and I want to process and then take it into my life and then go back and glean a little bit more. So you have amazing content on your show.
Oh, well, thank you. I think it's such a beautiful space for us to both be in, to be able to teach about stress management, peace, how to find ways to live healthier, both body, mind, soul. And I'm really curious how you ended up in the space that you're at, because I've seen so many, you know, courses about yoga, but combining that with the Pilates and the meditation, I'm just really interested in how your journey began and how you ended up where you're at today. So share a little bit about that with us.
Yes, my journey began with yoga when I was in college. I took my very first yoga class at the age of 19 and fell in love. And then I graduated college, married someone who was in the military, and started moving around. And I took my love for yoga and decided to make it something that I could do as a career, if you will, while I was raising my family and moving around from house to house every 3 years.
That's a rough go, but I bet the yoga kept you more grounded because there's so much movement with all of that, so much vata being increased and all that moving from place to place and having to resettle each time. I bet that was a blessing to you and your family as you had that as a tool.
It was for sure. I feel like it made me a better mother. It made me more present in my life. It made me more capable to go through the hard transitions of life and pick up and start over and over again.
Did you have any times? I was just going to say, did you have any times during that where your husband was actually deployed and you were separated from him for a long period of time?
So he was never deployed, but he was a missileer. So his schedule was a 36-hour rotation. So he would be gone for 36 hours, home for about 24 to 36 hours, and then gone again. So it was almost worse than a deployment because it was back and forth. Talk about vata energy, right?
Oh my goodness, I guess. Well, because I was picturing what yoga would bless your life with during that time of instability. Do you feel like it blessed him too, having that yoga be a part of your life while he was in such flux because you were more grounded?
Well, we're not married anymore.
So but that's okay. It still could have helped
him. We've been divorced for about 5 years now. But during that early phase, I think it did help because it helped me stay centered. It helped me stay grounded. I felt like I was the anchor of the family when everything else was moving around. Our very first big move, my oldest son was 6 weeks old. So I moved from Arizona to California. when he was 6 weeks old. And then our second move, he was 4 months old, back to Arizona waiting for a house in Montana. And then we arrive in Montana and I move into the home. And the next day, my ex-husband goes on his first alert for 36 hours. So I have an 8-month-old baby. I'm the furthest away from home that I've ever been in my whole life. And I have a house full of boxes.
Oh my goodness. That is so much stress. But while you were doing all of this, were you still practicing yoga while he was a newborn, or did you kind of take a pause? Sometimes that can be hard to integrate when you've got the demands of a child.
No, I actually practiced yoga through my whole pregnancy, and I committed to having a natural delivery. I feel like my yoga practice enabled me to do that. And then postpartum, I just started practicing yoga, listening to my body, very humbled by how my body was changed after delivery, after giving birth, how tight everything became. Like, it was this foreign body to me. I didn't know it anymore. So yoga helped me get to know myself again and heal and recover. And yeah, it was the seed that was always constant in my life from that very first yoga class in college.
Well, and then you started teaching not too long after that. Maybe just, it was what, 6 years or so that you were practicing, and then you started taking training to become a teacher. Was that transition natural for you at that point? Was it comfortable, or were you like most of us when we start teaching yoga and we're terrified? I'm like, I know how to do yoga, but I get in front of people and it's really kind of a different scenario than it is practicing it.
Yeah, I think I was almost a natural born teacher, if you will. During college, I coached gymnastics. So I always had this love for the body and watching how the body could move and what was needed to support movement. And once I decided to go through yoga training, it was really because I loved yoga so much for my own personal practice. And I was living in Montana at the time, and the only thing I could find was this weekend training that was not very great. It was probably just like a little drop in the bucket of what yoga truly is. But I studied Eric Schiffman. I read his book, Moving into Stillness. I studied Bikram and would go to the sauna at the Air Force Base and do my own Bikram. So I was self-taught a lot. And then once I moved to California, I joined the Santa Barbara Yoga Center, and that's where I did my teacher training. And I actually was able to train with Eric Schiffman and Sarah Powers and Paul Grilly, some really great yogis.
Well, you were kind of the vanguard of yoga teachers because it was late 90s, right? When you were doing this teacher training. And I know it wasn't very widespread. People weren't practicing yoga as much. There weren't studios on every corner like you see now. So it probably really was something where you had to really want it and desire that knowledge and that draw for that, I would imagine.
Yeah. So I went through that little 3-day training probably about 1999. And then my full certification, I started it in 2001 in Santa Barbara. I was 4 months pregnant with my second son.
You just love to throw things at yourself when you're going through a hard time already. Maybe it was good for you though. Maybe peaceful and created some peace for you.
I loved it. I think Eric Schiffman was terrified of me because I don't know about you, but with my second pregnancy at 4 months, I looked like I was 8 months pregnant. Mm-hmm. And I would show up every day with a suitcase full of food and I would devour it throughout the whole day.
He's like, this woman, I'm sure she's going to have this baby at any moment. What is happening? That's fun.
He wouldn't give me any corrections. He would kind of keep his distance, but I had the best time. And I was about a 50-mile drive north from Santa Barbara. We lived at Vandenberg Air Force Base, and my mom came to stay with my oldest son while I was commuting back and forth. So I had this lovely drive along the ocean to and from. My mom would have meals waiting for me. So for me, it was like an amazing experience.
Yeah, it sounds like it. So how did meditation come into it? Because I know that really yoga without meditation is just physical movement, I believe. But was it something that you integrated from the beginning? Was it something that slowly developed and into more of a spiritual practice instead of just physical? Or how did that grow for you?
So when I took my course in college, our teacher had this way of saying, she never talked about meditation, but She would say, look out through the backs of your eyes. And isn't that cool?
That is so cool. I've never heard that before. I have to like sit with that for a minute.
And
that's
when
beautiful.
I would actually feel like that was occurring, there was this transformation in how I felt. And I feel like that was the first seed that was really planted with meditation. Mm-hmm. I consider myself a spiritual being anyway. I was raised Eastern Orthodox, and the spirituality in the service always made me feel connected to God. Yeah. And as I started practicing yoga more, I would always find that feeling on my mat. And with meditation in particular, I came to it after I went through my main yoga training, about when my youngest was 14 to 18 months old. I took a yin yoga class with Sarah Powers at the Santa Barbara Yoga Center. And I don't know if you've if you're familiar with her work, but she's very much into meditation, Tibetan Buddhism. Her grounding and ability to touch your heart is incredible. Mm-hmm. So I took a 3-hour workshop with her and felt amazing. And then I noticed she was doing a silent yoga retreat. So talk about change again. I thought, well, this will be a great idea. I'm going to do a silent meditation retreat. I had no idea what I was signing up for. But as a young mom, I had just weaned my youngest son. Again, my mom came out to stay with my kids, and I went to the mountains of Santa Barbara for 4 days. And that's when I really brought meditation into my life.
That is probably longer than the majority of human beings go without speaking, I imagine. Is it completely quiet in the respect that there is no talking going on, there's no music, it's just the stillness of natural sound?
During our class sessions, Sarah would give a lot of dialogue in the yin yoga practice, and we always followed our 90-minute yin yoga with a 90-minute vinyasa practice. Mm-hmm. And there was a schedule throughout the day, so when she was teaching, she was giving dialogue. But when silence began, it was that first Friday night, we were instructed that even being in your journal or reading a magazine, that was considered breaking the silence. And I noticed for myself that being in close proximity with others, I tend to be a helper. So I would be holding the door for somebody or making sure that if someone was behind me, that they were taken care of if we were going through the food line. And she actually called us out on that. And I don't know if it was me specifically or if others were doing it too, but she said making eye contact and holding the door for people, that's also breaking the silence. We really needed to be only for ourselves. And that was a challenge.
Well, and as a woman and a mother, you're so used to caring for other people, but I bet that just felt amazing because as you were saying that, I thought, you know, that does, that takes you out of you and in, out of your internal quiet focus and put your focus on other people when you're worrying about them. Mm-hmm. That's something that would be challenging because I tend to do that too. I'm always thinking, how is this affecting someone else? And are they enjoying themselves? Are they happy? How is everyone else feeling? And I think it disconnects us from how we're feeling.
It does. And I was so happy that she pointed that out early on. So this was, I think, at breakfast time on that first Saturday morning. And once I was aware of it, because I wasn't aware, mm-hmm. right? Sometimes we're not aware until we are. And then I could be curious about it. So I felt my yearning to have the desire to check and look for others before myself. And when I turned my vision inward and only focused on me, there was a lot there, like a lot of emotional content to dive into and weed mm-hmm. through and experience. And it was almost like going through a detox. That's how powerful it was. I had night sweats both Saturday or Friday night and Saturday night. I woke up in like soaking night sweats. It was bizarre. Yeah.
That is so interesting. Well, and I wanted to talk today a little bit about thoughts, and I feel like that's a good segue because when you're quiet like that, is that a good way to observe our thoughts? I know it was interesting when I first started practicing yoga. So I'll tell a story first, then we'll go back. When I first started practicing yoga, I was the student that left during Shavasana. Yeah, I'm confessing this to all of you now, because I had a really hard time with that lack of doing, the just being part. Mm-hmm. And I felt like my mind was so busy that I couldn't be calm in that moment. And it felt more stress provoking. Like I didn't want to look at what was happening in my mind. And it was easier for me to get up and do something else. And it's still something that I struggle with and have to really stay focused to just be sometimes. But when we're looking at thoughts, I think they create a lot of, I think a term you probably use too is clutter. They mm-hmm. clutter up the mind. And so I wanted to dive into that for a minute, because anyone who's listened to my podcast before knows that I love to talk about thoughts. Yeah. I think they're like the driving force for a lot of our actions and emotions that we experience. But tell me, what's your viewpoint on thoughts and how they affect the way that our body works, the way our emotions feel? Just how do they impact us?
I believe that thoughts become things, and those things get stored in our body, good or bad. So most of us tend to be worriers. We tend to have thoughts that are not supportive, that are judgmental, that are not leading us into a place of empowerment. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, when we're aware of our thoughts and that inner dialogue, it tends to be this messy, cluttered place that, you know, we can either organize it and air it out, or we can just shut it down and let it continue to feed on itself. And then we become heavy and weighted and stressed and unable to be who we are meant to be in the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think when we're looking at thoughts, it can be scary at first, or we mm-hmm. think it will be scary. We have a thought about it being scary to yeah. observe what's happening in there. But I like the analogy that it's a dark room and we're just shedding some light on it mm-hmm. and allowing ourselves to really see what's happening in there. And during something like that quiet meditation retreat, I am sure you had experiences where you were very surprised perhaps by what you were observing your mind saying.
Yeah, I think when we are in our natural rhythms of life, when we're in our natural roles where we're the most comfortable, we don't really notice the quality and quantity of our thoughts. Mm-hmm. It's usually when we become still and then it's like, oh, what was that? Like, don't want to go there. Let's shut that door. Let's shut it down. But on a silent retreat, it was like opening the floodgates and everything was so clear and so visible. All of the things that I had not seen from keeping myself busy and distracted through the roles that I was comfortable in life. And we were able to meet one-on-one with Sarah during the retreat, and we had this discussion. And for me, it was really about having the courage and the curiosity to be present with what shows up. Mm-hmm. And that's how I practice now. And when I meet people like you who say Shavasana is miserable because there's nothing to do, or yin yoga, I get that all the time, but you're not doing anything. You're just sitting still. Like, that's miserable. I think that comes from the desire to be moving and to be flowing away from what we don't want to see. Mm-hmm. And today in my yin yoga class, actually, I really talked about the ability to be comfortable with the uncomfortable, to lean into the discomfort, to find one place that is uncomfortable and just to be with it. And notice if you're judging, notice if you're resisting, and how those thoughts impact that discomfort. Usually it makes it bigger and stronger. Mm-hmm. And it takes up more space and you give it more power. So if you can come to a place of curiosity and compassion, that's where kindness and generosity for yourself and your experience comes into play.
So I'm just curious. So oftentimes we're told, okay, you have these thoughts, let them rise, let them pass. sometimes journaling is helpful, at least for me. On a retreat where you weren't able to journal, I think that would be really an interesting experience because you're not able to write those things down that you feel like you need to get out of you somehow. Like they're, I don't know, like this evil canker within your mind, which maybe they're really not, right? They're just energy vibrations. But do you teach tools or do you have tools that you use that help to really declutter those thoughts? I mean, I think observing is definitely the first step, but for me and my pitta brain, I'm like, I want the steps, right? I want to know 1, 2, 3, 4, this is what I do to clear my thoughts. And perhaps that's just part of my inability to be still, but that's where my mind goes. I want a step-by-step what to do.
Sure. So from a more practical standpoint, in a regular course of a day, it's hard to just stop and be still and say, I'm going to notice my thoughts and I'm going to organize them. What I find to be the most helpful is planting things into your day, tools throughout the day that help you be mindful and present. And in doing so, your thoughts begin to simmer down. Mm-hmm. So it's not that you're focusing on the thoughts themselves and figuring out how am I going to organize these or give them space to breathe or let them go. It's more about creating an architecture of experiences planted throughout the day that's going to help you be reminded to be mindful, to be present. And number one is to find your breath. Anytime you find your breath, that's the easiest tool you have and it's always available. So when you're with your inhale or with the pause or with the exhale or with the pause, your thoughts are with the breath, and so everything else floats away, even if it's just for a millisecond, right? Even if it's just for that little pause between breaths. It's this moment of spaciousness, of weightlessness. So the breath is number one. Number two is digital peace. Parking your digital gadgets, getting your screens out of your space at least for 5 minutes at a time throughout the day. You know, today I took my lunch and sat outside under a tree with my dogs and ate my lunch to get away from the screen just for 15 minutes. And I felt so much better coming in. My brain felt clear. I didn't feel cluttered. I felt ready to go back to work.
Can I comment on that? Because I think that one is so hard. I work with so many clients and my encouragement to them is to do just what you did for your lunch. Set everything aside, get out in nature if you can, and just breathe, eat your food, be present. And it's such a habit for so many of us to reach for entertainment. And it's interesting because I'll often have clients say, well, that's how I unwind. But there's an increase in vata when we have that stimulus coming in, especially the way a lot of people are on devices and they're scrolling and things. Yes. And so taking like just a mini pause, I like that you didn't say go 4 days without your screens because I think most people would revolt, but just taking those little mini pauses throughout the day to just breathe and be away from technology, let yourself reconnect again. I think that's perfect.
Yeah. And even if it's just putting on your podcast and, you know, setting the phone further away and sitting outside on the grass when it's a nice day, for people who feel like it is a way to unwind, listening to something that feeds your soul and feeds your brain, that is nourishing as well. But like you said, scrolling, it keeps your brain active. And the more active your brain is, the more it's going to be thinking about things. Mm-hmm. So you're adding to the clutter when you keep the brain active.
You're actually aging faster too. Mm. So Ayurvedically, there's a term called parinama, and it's the impact of time upon our bodies. And we're actually biologically aging faster if our minds are unable to slow. And so when people are worried about aging, I tell them meditation, sit in quiet stillness and let your mind slow down because that is anti-aging at its finest, right? In that moment, you're slowing down the aging process within your body because you're slowing all of that movement down. And that's what increases our aging. So Wow. It's also anti-aging. It's kind of great.
I love that.
Yeah.
I always laugh because I say I'm probably the slowest person on the planet. I'm very slow and purposeful. So it's easy for me to say, hey, just sit down and meditate. But I know for people who are not in that nature, it is a challenge and it is difficult. But you've done it. So
It is, but I feel like it's something you have to really commit to. And for me, it started when I was in my yoga teacher training, and my teacher was such an inspiration to me in the way that she structured her day with the circadian rhythms. And I thought, I'm going to try just a piece of that. I can't possibly wake up at 4:30. I mean, this was the very beginning of my life of changing into being Ayurvedic. And I thought, there's no way, but I can meditate. And I can commit to doing that every day until we see it our class again next month. And so it was transformative. So for me, that was a small step to committing to changing how my mind worked. And it's one that stuck. I mean, you know, you try things sometimes and they don't last for you, but the impact was so great with the meditation that I just have my little pillow by the side of the bed. And that is the first thing I do when my eyes open is to sit and meditate. And people say, don't you fall back asleep? But you really, once you're in a habit of doing that, you really don't. You may at the beginning. Maybe I did at the beginning a few times, but I don't now. Now it's just a beautiful space for me to start my day from.
And do you move from the bed to your cushion on the floor?
Mm-hmm, I do. So, but it's literally, my friends, if you were watching me, I literally I don't even think my eyes fully open. I kind of slide out of the bed and I just plop down onto the cushion. The cushion just stays there. Sometimes my dog has taken up residence on the cushion and I have to push him to the side because he thinks it's his pillow, but I will come and sit there. And it's such a habit now. My husband always knows if he looks over early in the morning and it's before I'm doing things, he's like, yeah, he can just see the top of my head. He's like, yep, she's over there doing her thing. So yeah.
And how long do you meditate for?
About 20 to 30 minutes, and some days longer. It just really depends on how, because I don't set a timer. I just will sit and be in stillness. And so sometimes time will fly and it's amazing how long I sit, but I keep my morning pretty loose. So I don't have a time frame where I have to then be up really quickly after that because I am waking up pretty early. So, but I would say 20 minutes on the short end, probably about 40 on days where I'm just really, when I feel more deeply into that peaceful state. And there are days it's not awesome, right? I'm sitting there and my mind starts going crazy because I know it's a busy, busy day, but it's much better than it was in the beginning. It was really hard when I started.
And I think you have a great idea there for people who are busier, because coming right from sleep to sitting, the brain really hasn't woken up yet and it hasn't started all of its fun activity, right?
Because if I get up and do anything else, I can't do it. And I've kind of trained my body too. I don't need to use the bathroom quite yet. So I don't know if that's something that I've just trained over time, but I don't tend to need to until after I'm done. And it is almost like it wakes up that vagus nerve and it starts to stimulate all of the digestive tract, because it's like, this is probably TMI for everyone, but it's almost like clockwork after I'm done meditating. It's like time to hit the bathroom because it just has woken up everything on a really deep, subtle level. And then I just feel ready to move into the day. So that's how it's worked for me. I know some people maybe want to feel a little more awake when they do it, but I've really loved that. It feels like a really gentle way to greet the day.
Yeah, you start off with rest and digest.
Right? So then I can handle anything my kids throw at me or work or any of those things. It's just perfect after that. Yeah. So we were on a train of tools though. I think I interrupted you on number two because it was so great. We had to chat about that for a minute, but you were talking about, you know, taking that pause at lunchtime and just, you know, being away from your screen for a moment. Yes. So yeah.
So number three is purging your thoughts. And I use journaling for this. I always keep a pen and a notebook nearby, even when I'm sitting at my desk doing computer work. When thoughts come, I just jot them down. And I have a planner, which that would jump to number five, which is organizing your thoughts. So thoughts either end up in my planner to help me stay on task and keep my vision going forward, or it's more of my creativity, my emotional intelligence, my emotional health and well-being. And some of them will turn into blog posts or just stay there in my journal as thoughts that I can go back and look at later. And then number four, so I went from three to five, but they're very closely related. Mindful movement is number four. And this is where yoga and Pilates come in for me, and walking, taking walks in nature. Those are my three mindful movement practices.
When you walk, do you listen to anything or do you walk in quiet?
I listen to the birds. I take my Doberman. I have Mikey the Doberman, who's a rescue, and he is my soulmate. And we go out every single day, even here in Denver when it's 17 degrees or 0 degrees, and I don't want to go. I put on my parka and my boots, and I never regret getting out there.
That is a beautiful statement, because I don't think we ever regret the movement. Sometimes beforehand, we might, you know, begrudge the movement. We don't want to, but it's always something that is a blessing afterwards. When, as you were talking about journaling, I had a question for you. So I find that sometimes if I'm writing a stream of consciousness, right, I'm just trying to observe my thoughts, I want to kind of get them out on paper, that I just sound very whiny. Like I'm just complaining about things. And so then it makes me hesitant to want to do it, because I feel like I'm just being negative sometimes. And I'm bringing this up because I've had this experience from clients that have, we've talked about journaling, and they're like, I don't know what to write, because if I write what I'm really thinking, I just feel like it makes me feel more like I'm focusing on what is negative. But I loved what you were saying, that some of it that you're writing is like creativity, almost like ideas or wisdom, little pearls that come to you during the day. And then are other things that you're writing down, those distracting thoughts of, oh, I really need to call about the insurance, or I've got to check about my kids, this and that, or I got to schedule the dog for the vet. So do you kind of keep those ideas separate and allow yourself to just unload them in that way? And how do we deal with the negative? Because I tell you what, it's there. If we, if we sit there with it, I don't know if that's a good thing or not. So I don't know what you think.
So let me kind of unpack this one thing at a time. The easiest one to address is those distracting thoughts. So I always have my planner and my journal nearby. Things like, oh, I have to pick up the dry cleaning, or I need to do that one email. Those go into my planner. I dump them all into one spot, and then every Sunday I organize things out throughout the week. So obviously, if they're really burning, like I have to do this tomorrow, then I go to tomorrow and I put it on my to-do list for the next day. But when I end up with a big to-do list, I section that out and do a little bit each day to stay on task and on track and to feel complete and accomplished. Mm-hmm. Because I think that endless to-do list can be a really negative place and can inspire cluttering and negative thinking. Yeah. So I do a really good job of organizing. With the creativity, I realized on that silent retreat, I can be really poetic in my thoughts. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes one will just come to me and I'll jot it down. And it might turn into something, it might not. When I try to do more focused journaling, I just discovered a new journal called the Silk and Sonder Journal.
Ooh,
and
nice.
They have amazing journaling prompts and ones that are guided by voice as well. So that she calls those daily rituals. And her voice is lovely. She talks you through. And for people who have a hard time finding inspiration for writing, I would recommend Silk and Sonder. We can post that link in your show notes if you'd like.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And one thing that I've started doing at night when I want to journal is what I call celebrations. And I write down all of the things that I did well that day. And sometimes I have to think long and hard, because I tend to look at what could I do better or what do I still need to get done. So it's almost training that muscle of acknowledgement and celebrating all of those little things that we tend to forget or dismiss or look over, and go to bed in a positive mindset of, I did all of these things today. Even if it was as simple as I got my kids to school on time.
Yeah, acknowledging. Well, and I think it's the same, you know, with kids, they say positive reinforcement's more effective, right, than negative. So you're positively reinforcing yourself and the strides that you're making, realizing there is no such thing as perfection. We're just all making efforts every day. I like all those ideas, because I think sometimes the thoughts can get overwhelming, and so we try to hide from them instead of actually looking at them. But I like the way you did that. I still think we have to address the negative, though. What do we do with those things?
Yes, the negative thoughts. you can do many things. You can become curious about them, especially the ones that keep repeating themselves. Why do I keep thinking this thing? Is it true? And if we really dive in, we know it's not true. So why are we creating space and allowing it to be there? Is there something missing in our life that has this thought keep showing up? Is there something that might be fear-based that we aren't addressing, and this thought is kind of just poking at us to wake up, pay attention? You can also practice letting the thoughts go and simply saying, oh, thank you, and turning to the breath, turning to something else. We do this a lot in meditation, of noticing when something shows up and then going right back to the breath. Mm-hmm. Noticing when something shows up, going right back to the breath. So with negative thoughts, if you can create that ability to observe without being caught or hooked by it, it will change your relationship to that thought, and that thought will no longer have a home. You know, it keeps coming because you're getting hooked. You're giving it space. You're giving it time. You're probably ruminating. You know, once that thought comes, it starts the whole spiral downward of other things and other thinking. Affirmations are also a wonderful way, or setting an intention. So the difference between affirmations and intention, with an affirmation, sometimes people can feel more negative, if almost like they're trying to convince themselves, like, I am happy.
And they're not. They're like angry and steam coming out the ears. I'm so happy right now. And it's too fake. It's too much of a leap, I think.
So then maybe the intention is, I will seek joy in the small moments. And so where can you find joy? Are you seeking joy, or are you seeking what's making you unhappy or angry?
I like that. Well, and all of those just seem to scream out to me, pattern interrupt. When you're talking about getting hooked by thoughts, we get stuck in, I think, and we get stuck, or these samskaras, this continual patterned grooves that we've created and that we're also, you know, blessed with through karma. But I love some of those ideas, because I think when we're coming from our higher self, we're really able to observe things on a bigger level. We're able to see things in a way that we don't when we're kind of being microscopic. So it's almost, let's telescope back and instead watch what's going on, instead of being caught up in the vrittis, right? The dramas, all of the thoughts and the things that are happening in the mind. And even this conversation helps me in that mindset of thinking, okay, there we go. We can see things a little bit differently. Are these tools that you use with your clients then? I'm not sure how you work with people. I'm curious about that.
Yeah. So I teach private clients. Most of my private clients are Pilates, and then I will send them videos for meditation. My subscribers mostly come to my yoga classes. I teach a yin yoga and gentle yoga class live stream every week on Tuesday and Wednesday. And sometimes I'll just put together a prescription, if you will, of videos and ideas for a person to partake in. So depending on what it is that they're trying to invite into their life, whether it's becoming more organized with their planning or their journaling, or learning how to breathe, or learning how to meditate, or nourishing their body in a way that's going to sustain them over a long period of time. Some of my favorite clients are over the age of 60, and their ability to translate what they feel and learn in Pilates and yoga into the work that they do inspires me, because they're becoming stronger leaders, better communicators, more mindful in their relationships, both at work and at home.
When my mom's in her late 60s and she listens, so if she's listening, shout out to hi, mom. But I think that's a generation that needs some of that empowerment and that strength, because they were raised very different than, you know, my generation or the generations that come after us, because they were much more, especially if they're female, They weren't given that same strength to discover who they were and to connect on a deeper level. It was all about, you know, doing everything for everyone else and I don't worry about myself. So I think self-care, and I know that's something you focus on with people, is teaching them how to really take care of themselves. And it's so needed. And I think that's finally being recognized, especially with all the mental health crisis that we're experiencing post-COVID. I mean, you just see that growth in the, you know, suicides and depression and medication and just everything that's really become such a problem now. When you created Peaceful Living, I wanted you to tell me more about that, because you spell peaceful differently. And does this feed, I mean, have you noticed that this is something people are needing more, this peaceful form of life now than maybe we ever have before?
Yeah, when you think of being full, you know, to me, that's a sense of being satiated, being content, being at ease, being grounded. Mm-hmm. So to be peaceful, it's like you're full and you're at peace with whatever comes. And we know that life is going to throw so many things at us. That Vata energy is everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And if we can find it within ourselves to become more grounded, to be connected, to have emotional intelligence, to have the ability to activate the vagus nerve, to satiate ourselves just from a place of stillness and mindfulness and nurturing, I mean, how amazing would that be if more human mm-hmm. beings did that for themselves?
Well, and it's something that I think changes generational patterns. And that's something I've been studying a little bit lately, is just these generational patterns and how to shift them. And the more that we get connected to who we are, I think we start to see ancestrally, both, you know, ancestors and descendants, it affects both ways, because we're changing that energy vibration on a really deep level. And I don't know what the goals are for people when they come to you, but I'm imagining that they see a lot more benefits than what they initially anticipated, or their initial reasons for coming. They might, you know, say I'm stressed, and then they come away with so many more blessings from practicing meditation, yoga, and the Pilates.
Yeah. Normally most of my clients come to me for body things. They've either mm-hmm. been injured, or their back is hurting from too much sitting. They aren't feeling good in their body anymore, and they want to feel better. They want to move better. They want to play a better golf game. they want to be more active in their life and know that they need to do something to help their body along. So that's usually the interest that brings a person in. Although lately I am getting more people curious about not feeling so stressed out. Like, is that mm-hmm. even possible? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think people believe it's possible. Until yeah. they get a little taste.
And I think that's such a gift, because that's needed as much or more than the physical focus, but they kind of go hand in hand. I mean, you reduce the stress on the body and your body's able to respond better to the movement that you're giving it and react in a way that's proper, because your cells aren't freaking out the whole time. I mean, we're yeah. really, that stress that we're carrying with us is affecting longevity and our ability to even experience fully life. And so whether they come for you for physical or for emotional, I think they're getting both.
Yeah. And I think you probably experienced this, you know, after confessing that you were the one that hit the road, first of all. Yeah.
Those poor teachers, I'm so sorry to them all these decades later. That was not the best. But yeah, I came for the physical part. I was running a lot at the time mm-hmm. and doing a lot of distance, like marathons and things. And I was just tight everywhere. And so our rec center offered yoga classes. And I thought, well, I'll go try this. Cause in my mind, it was stretching. Right. I'd never done it before. And my husband had done some Gaiam videos at home with, like, you know, Rodney Yee. Yes. And so actually it was my husband that started yoga first, and I would watch him and I'm like, you're doing nothing. He'd be standing in mountain pose, you know, Tadasana. And I'm like, you're doing nothing. This is so dumb. I don't know why you're standing here in Tadasana. We were like early 20s at the time. And so to me, it didn't make any sense, but it made sense for stretching. And then I went to the practice and it was not stretching. I remember just shaking afterwards. My muscles were so like, wow, that was intense. But I also couldn't lay there during Shavasana. I'm like, what is this all about? I just have to get up and go. And so I think I went down and like ran 2 more miles on the treadmill. I mean, it was ridiculous where my mind was at the time, But after practicing for a time, because I felt good in my body, even though I wasn't getting benefits yet in my mind, because I wasn't allowing those benefits, when I finally could slow down and feel the practice, like you said, that connection to spiritual sense. And for me, it made that God connection a lot stronger as well. Then I loved it. You know, I craved that part of it. That was what kept me coming back, was how it affected me emotionally. And I felt like the physical was just a really nice byproduct, but it was more how I felt in my heart after I practiced, even more so than how my body felt. And it's still that way for me. It's kind of my peaceful space for sure.
Yeah. And I know you said you haven't really dipped into Pilates a lot. What I love about Pilates, especially for more type A pitta people like you, there's a lot more to do. So in Pilates, mm-hmm. we're focused on concentration, control, and centering. And the cues are always in that context of bringing the mind into the body to pay attention to how you're executing or engaging certain muscle groups. And then we go into precision, breath, and flowing movement. Those are kind of the layers that come later. So you build this foundation of centering, concentration, control of your body, of your movement. And then you start to layer in those more subtle things like the breath, the flowing mm-hmm. movement, because if we're only concentrated and controlled, you know, that's a tight, tense way of being. There needs to be flow. There needs to be that kapha, right?
Mm-hmm. We need to have some of that stability in there too.
Yes.
I love that. Well, I think that combination of how you work with people is just beautiful. And what brilliant ideas that you've given us today about thoughts. I think that's something that can benefit all of us. How can people find you, Roberta, so they can work with you if they're interested in what you're offering? I know you have some virtual things that you do. And so I think that would be great for them to know more about that. So where can they track you down? And you have a special gift. She has a gift for us, my friends.
She has
a gift as listeners of the Ayurveda Life School podcast. She's got a little present. So share with us your things. Go for it.
So my website is peaceful, and full has two L's, living.com. And on my website, I have virtual classes, so on-demand library, and also live stream classes. And what I love to do is help people find the tools that are going to work best for them. So I offer a complimentary discovery call anytime somebody wants to have a conversation and even just say, I have no idea what I need or where to start. We can talk about that. We can dive in and I can give them a few things to try. And like you said, sometimes things fit and sometimes they don't. So I love helping people find the right fit. And even if it's not a resource that I offer, I have a lot of resources that I can refer to. And so peacefulliving.com. I'm on Instagram, Roberta_peacefulliving. And I would love to offer your listeners 30% off any of the services on Peaceful Living.
Oh, that's so generous. That is so beautiful. Thank you so much.
Yes.
That's wonderful.
So we'll make the code Ayurveda 30, all capital letters.
Oh, perfect. And we'll put all that in the show notes, friends. So you guys will be able to find that on there so you can go on. And will it be intuitive where they enter that? Is there like a promo code section when they're checking out?
There is. So for example, if you go to my scheduling to take a live stream class, you'll be able to click on whatever it is that you want. I have a 30-day pass for $30. It's a great way to try and sample. Mm-hmm. That's good for live stream and on demand. So if you chose that and then you clicked on the promo code, it would take 30% off and you would enter your information from there.
Oh, that's so generous. Well, that's exciting. I love that. And I feel like, you know what, I'll just jump on there first. So everybody will know that it's amazing. Then I can share with them my experience. That would be so great.
Yes.
But it was so good to have you on with us today. And I'm glad that, we were able to learn a little bit more about what you do and just feel your energy. It's been really beautiful to chat with you.
I loved being here. I'll come anytime and I'm going to keep learning from you and keep listening. So thank you for showing up for all of us in the way that you do.
Oh, you're so kind. Thank you so much, Roberta. Have a beautiful day.
You too. Take care.
Before you go, was this episode helpful for you? Well, the most helpful thing you can do in return is to leave a review in iTunes. The reviews are what keep the podcast going. and be sure to subscribe and share this episode if you loved it.
You can connect with me online at AyurvedaLifeSchool.com, on Instagram, and on Facebook at Ayurveda Life School. Have a beautiful day. Namaste.